that your perception of the world is a reflection of your state of consciousness. That's very profound. And it's really important for us to keep that in mind. My perception of the world is a reflection of my state of consciousness. You know, if a vegan animal rights activist and an avid NRA card-carrying hunter both Googled the subject gun rights, do you think they would get the same results from their search?
No.
Not at all. If two people on either extreme of the political spectrum were to Google a politician's name, they would also get very different results. And both would receive information that they most resonate with. That's the purpose of the algorithm, to reflect back to you what you're wanting to see. It's called being in a social media bubble. And we can live in an echo chamber where we only hear what we agree with. This is the danger of that. And nowhere do we see this bubble immersion demonstrated more clearly than in people sharing the same cultural values inherent in the dominant social paradigm that they are centered in, and especially in the one that we're going to talk about today. We are continuing in the Evolution Revolution series as we move up another rung and examine the next paradigm shift. And I hope that as we go through this series, this exploration we've been on, that you've been having some transnarrative cognition moments along the way. My talk title is a term coined by modern-day philosopher Ken Wilber called boomeritis. More on what that means later. But a spoiler alert, any boomers here? Yeah, you probably have it, yes. Probably going to find some of these symptoms are in your life. So far in our series, using the system and the colors of spiral dynamics, we have been looking at the various shared values and worldviews that have occurred throughout history and compared those with our own individual development. And as we're growing and learning, when our center of gravity is occupying these various worldviews, we see the world through that unique perspective. My perception of the world is a reflection of my state of consciousness. And we began with the beige prehistoric era where survival was the only game in town. And we related that to infancy, where our very survival rests with our caregivers. Then the magical and ritualistic purple tribal age that followed that is linked to our toddlerhood years. The years of magical thinking, you know, I cover my eyes and nobody can see me. It's also a time in toddlerhood where you're finding your tribe, you're finding your place in the family. Red feudalism and personal power, it's the Wild West consciousness, connects us to our individual ego development. And if you've ever been in a power struggle with a three-year-old, you have experienced red energy firsthand. The blue rule of law period that follows the mayhem of red correlates with our school age years as we learn to corral that ego, we learn to don the mask of social acceptability and conform to the societal rules. And last time, we looked at the orange, rational, mechanistic, scientific, corporate worldview that began around 300 years ago with the Industrial Revolution. And developmentally, we're talking about the adolescent years when critical thinking starts to emerge. We start to question some of those blue rules that we have grown up believing. Today, we're moving on to the final worldview in what is known as first-tier consciousness, green, that showed up around 150 years ago. And when I say final, that does not mean it's the end of our evolutionary journey by any stretch of the imagination. But this worldview is a pivotal stage of our development. It can lead to a significant paradigm shift, both individually and culturally. And as you look at this slide, what do you notice about the time frame of each of these paradigm shifts? It's getting shorter, exponentially shorter. And that's good news for us. It's an exciting time to be alive. really, as we see what's on the horizon for us and how we can help to usher it in. That's the big question. Now, in our individual development, beige says, I will survive. It's the survival instinct that we have. Purple says, I belong. I'm part of my tribe. Red declares, I matter. It's about our personal power. Blue says, I do the right thing. I follow the rules. Orange said, forget the rules. I strive. I can change. And green says, I care. I care. Egalitarian green rises up as an adaptive response to Orange's mechanistic ladder of success worldview. Green says, okay, I have all the toys, but is that all there is? Where blue believes authority is right, orange says, well, what works or doesn't work dictates the rules. Green says, there's more to life than material success. And in our individual development, our attention shifts from the ambitious striving for success of orange to an interior exploration, searching for meaning. That's what comes forth in green. Green is very aware of social inequality, the perils of consumerism. It's all about human rights, equality, honoring of diversity, being socially responsible, care of the environment, breaking free from conventional roles. It's about interpersonal relationship, acceptance, connection, consensus. Green definitely has a 60s feel to it. A few years back, Gary and I went to see Paul McCartney in concert in Kansas City, and we shared the venue with thousands of people from our generation. It was a very, very green crowd in there. And he sang all of our favorites, and he honored each of the other Beatles in some way. He had pictures and video going in the background. It was just fabulous. And when he sang Hey Jude, he invited all of us to sing along with the na-na-na-na part, and that stadium came to life. And as when we all sang it together, tears were streaming down faces. I was one of them. As thousands of us joined together in what felt like an anthem from our youth. See? It had meaning to us, significance, because we all shared that magical era in our younger years. And that sense of coherence and community, cooperation, these are the gifts of green. Relationship is valued over outcomes. There's a sensitivity to feelings, empathy, all about human potential, focused on spiritual development. Sound familiar to anyone? A huge proportion of people involved in New Thought are centered in green. Our movement, our unity movement, is very, very green. And while orange is top-down management, green is bottom-up with the idea of the servant leader. Let's get everybody's point of view. There's definitely a discomfort with hierarchy in green of any kind. Everybody has a voice. Sounds great, doesn't it?
Yeah.
There's only one problem. Although it's very idealistic, it doesn't work so well in practice. Green is powerful as a paradigm for breaking down old structures, not so good at formulating practical alternatives. We're so busy processing, we never get anything done. And we run into problems with this kind of organizational structure. And what can arise are things like triangulation. Person A goes to person B to talk about
person C
instead of directly. That's one thing that can show up in unhealthy green. There's a lot of fear around rejection and disapproval. So there's a lack of holding people accountable. We don't want anybody's feathers ruffled. We don't want to exclude anybody or politically correct to a fault. There's a high tolerance for dysfunction because we just want everybody to be happy and feel affirmed. And unfortunately, all that affirmation can lead to narcissism. These unhealthy aspects of green are called boomeritis. And the biggest problem is the belief that the green worldview is the best one. But it is the best one, right? Anybody can see how great green is. And that belief is the biggest deterrent to transformation, I'm here to tell you. And I hate that. But when there's attachment to any one viewpoint, it puts the brakes very effectively on any kind of emergence of a new way of being. Just what happens. My perception of the world is a reflection of my state of consciousness. Now, green and orange have a sort of a mutual contempt, almost an allergy to each other. Orange looks at green like, you bleeding heart snowflake. And green looks at orange like corporate corruption, you're destroying the earth. I'm here to tell you we need both. We need cufflinks and peace signs. Without orange, green dies on the vine. Without green, orange lacks heart. So they both have their merit. There's a story I heard that demonstrates to me what a good mix of healthy green and orange might look like. There was a man who applied for a job at a place that needed people who not only had critical thinking and problem-solving skills, but also compassionate heart. And so one of the questions on the application was a bit of an ethical dilemma for them to solve. And it went like this. There's a severe blizzard shutting down the city. You're slowly navigating your way home from work in your two-seater sports car. And through the blinding snow, as you come to the bus stop, you see three people. A friend who recently saved your mother's life with the Heimlich maneuver. An elderly woman obviously in need of immediate medical help. And the man slash woman of your dreams. You can only pick up one person. Who will it be? Well, the young man who got the job answered it this way. I would pull over, give my friend the car keys, and ask him to drive the woman to the hospital, and I would wait for the bus in the storm with the woman of my dreams. Good answer. Now that's using brain and heart, and that's what orange and green can look like when they work together, see? And a reminder, there's nothing better or worse about any of these worldviews. Just as an adolescent is not better than a toddler, an adolescent can do more. But neither one is wrong or bad where they are in their development. In fact, we all wear all of these worldview glasses. Do you recognize yourself throughout the spiral? Because as we move through the various developmental stages of our lives, we transcend and include the previous one, so we can find a little bit of each of these within. We may be centered in blue in our home life, orange in our work life, green in our spiritual community. And here's the thing, if we find that we have an aversion or an allergy to an element of an earlier worldview, it means we have not completely integrated it or included it yet. And this shows up as disowning parts of ourselves, otherwise known as the shadow. If, on the other hand, we have an addiction to any element from an earlier one, we haven't yet transcended it or successfully differentiated from that element, and it shows up as an inability to disidentify exclusively with a former self. So imagine if we never let go of being a toddler, if we still identified as a toddler, can you see how that might get in the way of us moving forward in our evolutionary process? So whether there's an allergy or an addiction to something unresolved in our past, we need to do the healing work with that arrested development before we can make the leap to a new paradigm of consciousness. We have to clean up those pain points from our past, and we do that through
the cue process.
We do. We absolutely do. This is good information for us to have as we look at what our individual work may be in order to help midwife a new paradigm of consciousness, conscious cultural evolution into being. That's our work. That's the work that awaits us. So let's take a look at what that work might look like. I'd like to invite members of the Shadow Box Reader's Theater Group to come forward and give us an inside look.
Welcome to Shadowbox Theater, a place where we meet up with our projections whenever we judge someone else. It's highly annoying. This morning, we are tuning into our friend, Peaceful Pam, who was about to come face to face with a major projection. She is joined by some close companions, Judging Mind, and Forgiving Heart, as they get ready to watch their favorite television news program together.
I think I'll turn on the news. I haven't watched it for a few days.
Are you sure you want to know what's going on out there? I bet it won't be good news. It never is these days.
I think it's safe to watch. After all, I need to keep informed.
Tonight's top news story. Perry politician today just signed a bill into law to begin fracking in the local wildlife preserve.
Suddenly, Peaceful Pam was no longer peaceful.
What? This is outrageous. He's selling out. He doesn't care about animals or the environment. He's just greedy and lining his own pockets.
Becoming more and more upset, Peaceful Pam suddenly became aware that she was being triggered and was able to pause. Judging Mind had something to say about it.
So, you do know when something or someone triggers you, it means they are mirroring parts of yourself that you don't want to look at, right? So, when have you sold out in some way in your life without caring about the consequences to others?
Me? I'd never do that. Well, except there was that time. Oh, and then that other time. Yeah, I can find it. In fact, I can find a lot of examples from my younger days.
Well, this isn't helpful. Yes, it's important to realize that we project our stuff onto other people, and to see that what we are triggered by in another is connected to what we are hiding from within ourselves. But that doesn't mean we beat ourselves up about it. Guilt, shame, and self-condemnation will not help with the healing.
So what do I do?
Go ahead and find it within yourself, yes. And then, with tenderness, forgive it. Self-forgiveness is the answer.
Peaceful Pam understood that what triggers you in another's behavior is really a reflection of what is hiding within. But somehow, she had previously missed the crucial part about self-forgiveness being an important piece of the healing equation.
Take a moment, focus on your heart, and begin to feel empathy and compassion for your younger self. You were doing the best you could with the resources you had. All of that misguided behavior was completely driven by a need to feel worthy. Remember?
Oh my God. All the times I acted that way, I was really struggling to overcome a belief that I was unworthy. I was just trying to find happiness. I was on an impossible quest to find something outside of myself that can only be found from within.
Suddenly, Peaceful Pam's heart opened, and judgment melted into complete loving compassion towards her younger self. The guilt and shame shifted to self-forgiveness, deep compassion, tender gratitude, and powerful healing.
That politician is just doing the same thing I was. He was just trying to find happiness, and he thinks that more money or power will do it. It won't. He's just as doomed as I was to find what he's looking for outside of himself. I feel total compassion for the both of us.
A town hall meeting has been called at his constituent office this Tuesday night. And that's it for tonight's news. Stay tuned for an update from our weatherman, Climate Change Chuck.
Wait, now does that mean you're going to just let him get away with what he's doing?
Hell no. It doesn't excuse his behavior. I'm calling his office first thing in the morning, and I'm signing an online petition tonight. I'll be at that town hall meeting next Tuesday, and I'm going to march for the environment next week. But I will take all of those actions with kindness and compassion, after making my own amends when I can, for all those times I remember having the very same behavior. Then I will be free of any self-condemnation toward my own past history.
Peaceful Pam took all of those actions, and she was a picture of compassion, peace, clarity, and power.
And that is not fake news.
Thank you, Shadowbox Theater Group. And just to clarify, this was a dramatized reenactment of something that really did happen to me. Now, it was a local politician doing the selling out, by the way, no one you would recognize. But the end result is very similar to what you just saw. I had a trans-narrative cognition moment. I saw clearly the depth of my projection. And that's how the transcending part works. You see something you didn't see before. You widen your perspective to a larger view. You take the red pill. But the work doesn't end there. Our minds are very clever and adept at rationalizing, making up stories, blaming. And when we catch ourselves doing that, it can be very easy to now shift the blame and send it inside of ourselves, just like it did with me. So it takes the deeper intelligence of the heart to move into compassion for ourselves and for anyone else that we may be judging. This experience was monumental for me. I was startled into awareness, and the self-forgiveness was pivotal for the healing to happen. It's really a form of Ho'oponopono, the Hawaiian practice of seeing it out there, forgiving it in here. And this is our work. See it out there, forgive it in here. Take every triggering moment that shows up and utilize it to gain a larger perspective. Do you see? That's the work. Now, this doesn't mean that every single corrupt action that you witness in another is reflecting who you are or is directly linked to your own personal history. Unless it triggers you beyond what is an appropriate response. That's the clue. Concern, dismay, caring, a desire to have your voice be heard and to take action of some kind, very appropriate. Being suddenly airborne like I was, stomping around the living room, yelling at the TV screen, pay attention. Pay attention. There's something there to look at. Not only that, but there's a gem waiting to be unearthed in moments like that, when they happen. And the greatest treasure of all is that we stop shadow boxing with ourselves. We clear the path of self-discovery. My perception of the world is a reflection of my state of consciousness. Now, to be clear, I'm not talking about traumatic, abusive relationships and situations here. An appropriate response to abuse is no, and I'm getting help to be safe. So please don't hear that I'm suggesting anyone stay in an abusive relationship and let those triggering moments do their stuff and just continue to let that abuse happen. What I'm talking about are the paper cuts in life, because they hold the potential for an incredible depth of healing. And if you are being highly triggered by something, that's the clue. Take a closer look. With compassion, with self-forgiveness, use the cue process to help integrate and differentiate. Get ready for a moment of transnarrative cognition. And then, as Rumi says, keep knocking and the joy inside will eventually open a window and look out to see who's there. Because that's what's waiting for us. That's what's waiting for us in this work. Beyond the story is joy, is the reality of who we are, is the true self. And as we're doing this work, here's an important thing for us to keep in mind. Throughout history, each of these paradigm shifts were revolutionary. They were cutting edge in their time. It was a result of the creative evolutionary impulse bringing forth something new. And so we want to be grateful for each and every one, just as in our own developmental process, we want to be grateful for each and every stage. Because the sufferings and the inadequacies for each one of these eras contained the fuel, provided the fuel for transcendence into something new. Do you see that? So in the past, these shifts came about as an adaptive measure toward the issues and problems that were happening in the current culture. But it was not done consciously. See? These ladies had no clue that these folks were on the horizon. The 60s were a great time to be young, not so great to be parents of the young. Clash of worldviews there. So the paradigm shifts that come forth in first tier are more adaptive and reactive. But second tier, where we're on the horizon here, conscious, deliberate, awake, aware. Do you see it? All that we're talking about in first tier is relative development leading to transnarrative cognition as we shed the blockages to awakening to the true self, to who we already are. And I believe that the shift from first tier to second tier consciousness is on the horizon.
Yeah.
It truly is. In fact, according to the research, the seeds have already been sown. We'll talk about that next time. And we can choose to be willing and conscious participants in both our own individual development as well as the emergence of a new cultural paradigm. Are you up for that?
Yes.
Yes. Stay tuned for more on how we can make that happen as we continue our paradigm climb, and next time we move to second tier. Yeah. Woo.
Thank you. Unity stands for peace in the presence of conflict, for love in the presence of hatred, for forgiveness in the presence of injury. Unity honors the many names for God, the many paths for God, for we know that there is only one power, one presence, one life. So whoever you are, wherever you are on your spiritual journey of transformation, you are definitely welcomed here. We would especially